All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever this is. It's going to be a good one, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk about a trendsetter. We're going to talk about an unusual musician. We're going to talk about a guy who overcame many, many obstacles. As a matter of fact, a guy who turned obstacles into stairways. We're going to talk about William Henry Webb, born in 1905 or 1907 or 1909, depending on who you're going to believe. In these years, as I've said in other dialogues here, there was a high level of mortality of young black children. So quite often, when there was a birth, there would be no doctor and no official birth certificate for quite some time because there was a high possibility that the baby would not survive. So sometimes exact birth dates were very difficult to pin down. And so was the case of Mr. Webb. We're going to assume that he's born in 1905 or 1907 or 1909. He was born in Baltimore, we know that. And his father was William, I think his mother was Mabel. And he was one of four kids, the only male child, the others were girls. As an infant, he had a terrible accident. He fell down a flight of stairs. And this caused a lot of damage to vertebrae and spine. And he ended up being plagued with what they call tuberculosis of the spine for the rest of his life. And how this manifested itself, other than just continuous surgeries, and pain and discomfort, is that he did not grow very tall. He was short in stature, and he walked bent over like a hunchback. And most people thought he was a hunchback. And this was not a birth defect. It was a result of an accident as an infant. Well, as he's going through all of these problems as a young kid, trying to survive it all, a doctor suggested that he should learn to play an instrument, maybe the drum, because that way he's moving around a lot and arms and shoulders and whatnot, and this would loosen those bones and give him more comfort and perhaps give him more longevity in terms of the ability to move and live a more fulfilling life. So he started playing drums mostly as therapy as a very, very young kid. But he was good at it. He loved it. And it was therapeutic as well. So he was doing this thing. And by 11 years of age, he was actually starting to play professional gigs. He practiced unbelievably, had great technique, great chops, and he just overcame all these handicaps. The neighborhood was kind of harsh. When I was a kid, we used to do what we call play the dozen, where you talk about each other's mother and stuff like that, or talk about each other's person. And so was the case with young William. Because of the way he walked and him being hunched over and low to the ground, the kids in the neighborhood called him Chicken because of the way he walked. And his mother hated that. And she called him William his whole life. But he didn't mind because he understood the game. We all have nicknames in the hood. And although these are not always enduring, they're sometimes empowering. So Chicken flipped the script. As he grew up and gained some prominence as a drummer, rather than continue to call himself William or Bill Webb, he shortened that Chicken to Chick. So he became Chick Webb. Yes, he did. And at 17, he actually asked his mother permission to move from Baltimore to New York because he was playing his butt off and he was controlling everything around Baltimore, and he wanted to go to where the action was, and the action was New York City. Boom, mama says, yes, let's go. Can't hold this little fella back, he's come so far. He gets to New York City and he starts playing around in different little bands. And sometimes he's playing in nightclubs in the city, and sometimes he's on tour. So his career goes, I'll play the clubs I can for a while, and when gigs dry up in the city, I'll get a band and go on the road and make some money, and et cetera. After about 3 years of doing that, he had his own band. And this is like at 20 years of age. So now he's calling his shots. He has a band that he can book into this place and into that place and into this place and into that place, and he can take it on the road when he wants to. Man, things were starting to really get great for him. His band was gaining a reputation for being one of the swingiest bands in the country. Remember, he's not just playing New York, he's going on tour. So people all around the country are beginning to hear this band, and the word is getting out that Chick Webb and his band is something to deal with. By 26, he is the band leader of the house band at the world famous Savoy Ballroom. Yes, right, B Savoy stomping, baby. Lindy Hoppers, all of that. So when you're in that situation, you got to swing. You got to make them dance. You got to go. And Chick's thing was, man, he would play the most exciting drum solos. But at 4 measures or 8 measures, he would light it up. Now, as I said, he overcomes. He knows how to overcome. And being a little short guy, all hunched over, he couldn't already reach the cymbals. So all of his cymbals were on goosenecks. Something that you can kind of bend and bring close to you. And all of his pedals for his bass drum and his hi-hat, they were custom-made pedals because he was, you know, a little bit different in his stature. And he used a 28-inch bass drum, an ungodly large bass drum, and that probably was, again, the way he's adapting his equipment to fit his physical self. He also had other percussion instruments, whether it were chimes or bells or Latin percussion or whatever. He likes toys, he likes sounds, but his big thing was, man, he could play those drums. And there he goes, he's tearing it up at Savoy. Now, in these days, people like to try you, because back in the early days of jazz, we had the Kings down in New Orleans, King Oliver and King Freddie Keppard and all of that. Well, this tradition continued, just didn't call them Kings anymore. Call them Dukes and Counts and all that, or Chick. Chick had this band in Savoy, and people had to come into Savoy and set up their band off to his and play tune, and this band play, and this band play, and this band play, and there'd be a contest as to which band was the hottest band. Yeah. So Benny Goodman brought his band in there because he was the king of swing at that time, remember? And the Chick set them on fire, and they left. Gene Krupa was the drummer for Benny Goodman at that time, and every time they had to go face Chick Webb, Gene Krupa would say, well, I guess I'm going to get another drum lesson. At least he had a good sense of humor for it. And here's something else. Go find some videos of Gene Krupa. You will see that he hunches over the drums, just like Chick Webb, and he moves that head side to side like Chick Webb. Yeah. Imitation is a very high form of flattery. And they all respected Chick Webb. And then came Count Basie. Count Basie, yep, the swingiest band in the Midwest, the Kansas City Sound. Chick Webb cleaned their clock. And Basie said he was happy that they didn't lose by even more, because he knew what Chick Webb was. But then it was Duke Ellington time. And the word is that Duke Ellington won. But there were people 40 years later arguing the point and saying, no, Chick cleaned Duke's clock too. So you got to understand, Chick had that kind of band. Somewhere around 1935, Chick discovered a young lady, and she could sing, and she had her own style. She was just a little girl, very, very young. And people kind of said, well, maybe he adopted her because she's too young to be up there, but man, can she sing? Well, that young girl was Miss Ella Fitzgerald. And when Van Alexander wrote that arrangement of A Tisket, A Tasket, and Chick Webb and Ella recorded that thing, it became a great hit. Maybe the biggest hit of her entire career, and of Chick's entire career as well. And maybe of Van's career as an arranger as well. Ella set that thing on fire. We'll come back to talk about Ella a little bit later. Now, this is about 1935, and things are going great. But you see, we had that stock market crash in 29, and we had some of this going on with the economy. And somewhere around 35, 36, 37, in the middle of all this, people were losing jobs and this and that, and the Savoy couldn't really paint a full big band like it needed to be paid, so Chick, you know, he went from paying this club to going on the road, could make more money on the road. But it's hard on the little fella because he's got all these physical problems, but he was dedicated to his band. The word was he was the most generous person with his time, with his affection, and with his money. So he went out on the road knowingly doing injury to his health in order to keep the guys in his band employed. And this kept going for a number of years. Great music, great recordings, great memories. And then things got worse somewhere around 1938, and he could hardly make it through a set. He'd play a set and have to go relax and rest. He was just working himself to death, literally. And in 1939, in Baltimore, John Hopkins Hospital, Chick Webb died of the very disease that had plagued him his entire life, tuberculosis of the spine. It's amazing that they say his last words were, "I'm sorry, but I got to go." Because even on his deathbed, his heart was about supporting those people he loved, his fellow musicians, his band, his family. He didn't have any kids, but he had a wife, he had a sister, he had a mother. He was supporting them. He was also supporting all kinds of charitable causes. There's actually a Chick Webb Recreation Center still standing in Baltimore. He gave to civil rights organizations. And he worked tirelessly against racism, even supporting the Scottsboro Boys Legal Defense Fund. And you might know about that case. 8 young African Americans between 12 and 19 who were accused of raping 2 white women. It turned out to be a farce, but those guys were convicted a couple of times. Some of them escaped, some of them went to jail. And the last one who actually escaped was located in 1976 and pardoned by guess who? Governor George Wallace, who had been one of the biggest racial segregations of all time. People do change. Thank you. But this was Chick Webb. As bad as his story could have been if he would have had a more negative outlook, he was always looking out for everybody else. He always had some joy in his heart. And that joy in his heart came out through his music, through his drumming, that smile on his face and all of his antics. And every drummer, Buddy Rich, Louie Belson, Art Blakey, Gene Krupa, they all have said out of their own mouths that the beginning of drumming, real drumming, is Chick Webb. And the great Duke Ellington himself said, the motto of a great band leader is Chick Webb. Now, Chick did not live for 37 years, but he spent those 37 years doing what he wanted to do, spreading joy and helping people. And Duke took that example and stayed on the road for 60 years supporting this great jazz tradition and supporting his fellow musician. This is the story of jazz. This is the story of William Henry Webb, who was called Chicken by neighborhood kids, but grew up to be the world famous Chick Webb, the beginning of swing drumming and a model of a band leader. At his memorial in Baltimore, there were between 8 and 10,000 people there, including the governor of Maryland. This is in 1940. The governor shows up. And of course, his wife was there, Sally, and his mother, Mabel, and his sister was there. But so was Ella, who continued to run Chick's band for 3 more years, probably because she was following Chick's example. Ella Fitzgerald and her famous band is what it was called after Chick died. And even the heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Louis, left the gym and left the ring long enough to come and pay respects to Chick Webb in Baltimore. This is who Chick Webb was, and this is how he affected everybody he came in contact with, from Chicken to Chick, from falling down the stairs to climbing mountains. You can make it if you try. Thank you for your example, Chick Webb.